And so for me, this became like the icebreaker. And a lot of women have stories, and women close to us, but we just never talk about them. And, you know, like I say, you know, once you speak about it, you break the hold it has on you.
Welcome to PageCast, a podcast series brought to you by Jonathan Bull Publishers. By interviewing the authors responsible for some of your most loved books, we explore the thoughts, ideas, emotions, and creative processes that led to the writing of these books. If you're a reader with a zesty interest in people and stories, do stick around and enjoy what PageCast has to offer.
Sue, I'm so excited that we are doing this. I love one of my favorite things to do is to interview authors, so it's just been a real treat. And I know that narrowly speaking, our undertaking today is to talk about your latest offering, which is When Secrets Become Stories, Women Speak Out, of which you are the editor. But I feel as if it would be remiss of me first to not talk a bit about you, your success as a novelist, your writing process. I feel like possibly I would find myself at the wrath of your readers if I didn't kind of delve a little bit into Sue and not just the latest work, which of course we will do in just a bit. But I know a little bit about you. I know, and I know a little bit about you because we're both kind of in the literary world. I know a little bit about you because I know a few people who know you. I know a little bit about you because I've researched you.
Yeah.
But what I know about you is that you were born and grew up in Bulawayo. You were raised on a large freehold. Your parents had a market gardening business, right?
Yeah. In addition, they were both professionals, but yeah, they also had this marketing gardening thing going. So, you know, dual income, what do they call it now? many sources.
Yeah, dual income.
Well,
in terms of your literary memories, what would that look like? I'm always so fascinated to hear from writers, from authors, what their earliest memories of literature, of storytelling were.
Whenever we talk about literature and books, I think for me, you know, just the love, my earliest memory, it was in a Fair Lady magazine, actually. So we had this neighbor, Mrs. Williams, Joan Williams, and she always used to give me, you know, magazines that she no longer, you know, read. I used to cut out the pictures and write stories around them. So for me, that was, you know, the fascination of the actual writing. You know, as we grew, we were exposed to a lot of literature, mainstream European literature, because that's what was taught. You know, the school I went to, we didn't do African literature. We just focused on European literature. And a lot of the books I was exposed to didn't have African characters. There were very few. So for me, I think that's when the thirst began, because I was like, you know, I'd like to see more books with people like me, stories about me. So when I started writing, I wanted to write our stories. So it was that, you know, that dearth of books. I mean, most of the literature that we consumed didn't have Black people. So for me, that dearth of literature with Blacks, where Blacks were the main protagonists, really, you know, really drove me to want to then write about Blacks and write our own stories, you know, and the Black lived experience. So that's, you know, that's my story.
Do you remember the first book that you picked up and read, and you were seeing somebody or reading about somebody in that book who mirrored you in that way?
No, you know, there was never any, like, if I think of all the books that I read, none of them had any black girls that mirrored me in any way.
I know about you that you, as much as you loved reading as a child, you loved writing. And the reason that I know that is because I'm a friend of a school friend of yours who tells me we used to read Sue's books when we were at school. That amazes me. How old were you when you wrote your first novel?
I was 13.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was. So for me, that was my first like foray into having an audience. But I used to, when I used to write the books, I used to do it like on an A5 exercise book and have a cover and a cover design. I would present it like a book, or, you know, preparing, rehearsing for what would eventually come. And so, and I became popular for my books in school. So everyone knew me for my books. It was Sue's books. And once that class had finished, they passed, you know, they were passed to other classes. And then my book started to move to other high schools. And it was always interesting that they would come back intact. No one ever, they didn't get lost. And it was always a rule, like it's one night only, like a, you know, video hire, you know, that, you know, we used to have VHS. tapes, videotapes, and you could only have it one night. And you were lucky if you took it on Friday because it meant you had the weekend. But there was always pressure because there was only one copy. But it was a system that worked. People just read.
Yeah. So those books, those early days books were your inspiration. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but your inspiration was the Sweet Valley High series. You and I are of the same generation.
Yes.
Give us a bit of a synopsis, perhaps, of that first book.
So Crazy Over You was actually like, you know, a high school romance.
Yeah.
Young love, you know, coming of age, because the characters were of that age. But the characters in that book were still white. So at that point.
Were they?
Yes, I wasn't writing black characters. I only started writing black characters when I was 16. And so, like I'm saying, it took a while to transition. And then, you know, it's like you suddenly wake up one day and think, but, you know, why don't I write about black people like me? And
did you question at the time, Sue, why you weren't writing about black people?
I think it's because of, like I'm saying, the books I read were about white people. And I just thought, you know, it's just like, that's the norm.
Got it.
Until it occurred to me that, you know, there's no reason why I can't write black characters. Why can't, you know, when I was much older, it was, you know, I was like, but why aren't my characters black?
Was being a published writer always the goal?
I don't think I said it in so many words, but I just knew that, you know, I wanted to have a book out there. I mean, the writers that I grew up seeing, you know, Yvonne Vera, Chenjerai Howe, Titi Dagarembo. So those were the, you know, the writers that we knew about. Like black writers, right? That were in my immediate world. So I want to be like her.
Somebody once said, I don't know who it was, you're only a proper writer once you've had three books published or something. You're only a proper author once you've had three books published, which I think is a load of nonsense. But I mean, you have had, you've had three novels and you've had When Secrets Become Stories. Yeah. I wonder, and I'm now in the process of doing my second book. And what I'm seeing now, and you will be able to speak to this, is first of all, it's very easy once you've done the first book, or for me it was, to go, that was a complete fluke. I look back on that now and go, I don't even know who that person was who wrote that book. How did I do that? That was just sort of crazy. I can't believe I've done that. And now that I'm in the process properly of doing the second one, it's like being pregnant. It's like I'm remembering what it was like.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You kind of go, oh yeah, this is how I write again. This is what I do, and this is what these are the sort of surroundings that I need in order to write well. And for me, it's silence. I can't have noise, which is why I do a middle of the night writing thing, because I just can't. I've got a very short attention span, I think, and I'm very easily distracted. So I have to write in the middle of the night. I have to disconnect my internet from my laptop, or before I know it, I'm, you know, Googling, I don't know, dogs on skateboards on YouTube, because I am a procrastinator. What have you learnt about, in a qualified way, about your writing process and discipline?
Okay, so to start off, like you, I like silence, right, when I write.
Right.
And no music, nothing, just silence, me and my thoughts. And that's why I actually enjoy writing at that 3 a.m. time, you know, that morning. It's really quiet. But, you know, it's like, as I've gotten older, I struggle to wake up at that time, right? So I had to change that routine. And so what I try to do, like, is write in the mornings, you know, so it might not be at 3 a.m., but in the mornings. After my son has gone to school, because I also have that quiet time. So if I don't have any other competing demands, like I do a lot of freelance work, right? Then I can focus, because I create that quiet environment and then I write. I think for me, the first book for a lot of people feels like a fluke, like you've just said.
Yes.
And so when you write your second book, I thought the second book was the toughest to write, because you're trying to prove that, okay,
Exactly.
You're trying to live up to expectations as well.
You're writing, do you read a lot while you write? Read other things while you write, or do you not do that at all?
Like when I start to write, I do stop reading other books, right? Like completely, because it's to drown out those other voices. Because I find then I have too many voices in my head.
Yeah.
So, like now, although I'm writing, it's not really writing my novel. So I've been doing a lot of research. Like the novel I'm writing now requires a lot of research. So I've been actually focusing a lot on reading around research. So for the book. But I'm going to get in December, I'm going to start writing the book, my novel again. but I will stop reading other novels when I start that, because I find it's like noise in the background, it disturbs, my thought process. So yeah, so to answer you, I don't like to read when I'm writing.
Let's talk about when secrets become stories, when women speak out. Why this book? Why now? How did it come about?
You know, after I wrote A Family Affair, right, which is, a fictional narrative that centers, gender-based violence.
Yeah.
You know, people came back to me and say, but why did you end the book like the way you did? You didn't give people hope. You didn't. And I was what?
Let's not give it away. We're not going to give away the ending. But yeah, why did you end the book the way you did?
And I felt like, people, some endings can be very problematic in the sense that you're selling people dreams.
Yeah,
because if you've met, women who've experienced gender-based violence and have actually left, there's this always myth that they end up with happily ever after, and sometimes they don't. And so I felt like I didn't want to sugarcoat things. There's some who do have, those kind of, because everybody wants that sugar, sugar sweet happy ending. And sometimes a happy ending doesn't necessarily look like sugar, but it's still a happy ending.
That's true.
And so I felt like I wouldn't be doing justice to the, the topic if I didn't let them tell their own stories. Whereas with my character in my book, it's a fictional character, right?
Yeah.
And I'm writing the stories of people who didn't survive. So that's what I was doing. And that was the difference between the two.
You speak in the intro of the book about your awakening around your own abuse. And I thought that was so interesting because I've had conversations with colleagues and with friends of mine, and we've told stories, and we've all told stories of how things have happened to us that at the time we didn't realize that the incident or the incidents, the relationship that we were in was abusive. And so it was interesting to me that you wrote about your awakening. Can you speak a little bit to that?
I first came to that realization through a book, reading a book, and later again, when I was older, when I read Rami Chwene's book, where she spoke about her own abuse, being sexually abused. And I was like, wow, she actually put it out there. And I reached out to her, and it was actually the first time I'd ever spoken to anyone. It's one thing to acknowledge that you were abused, but it's quite another to actually talk about it, And so for me, that sparked that conversation in a series of text messages. We didn't speak verbally, but, for me, that was the beginning. And then I began to think, If a book can, affect, me, if affect a person, someone telling their stories, and we don't often see that, I felt, why not do this? Imagine how many people I can reach out to. And so that's how, the idea came, like, why don't we write it in a book? Because I'd actually given a talk, previously to during the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. And I actually spoke about my abuse in an audience for the first time to strangers, and it was easier telling strangers, a room full of strangers, and for me that was so empowering, like, finally it's out there. I don't need to, this story doesn't own me anymore, it's just out there. And there was a woman in there who heard the story, and it changed her, because she was dealing with her own trauma that she hadn't dealt with. She was drinking as a result of this trauma, and so me speaking about it also sparked, her journey to healing. So it really then, just solidified this thought that, let's get talking, about these stories. Let's write about it. In the most strange way, like, people I've known for years, after the book came out, they said to me, oh, you should have asked me for my story. And women I've known, for years, but we've never spoken about it. And so for me, this became like the icebreaker. And a lot of women have stories, and women close to us, but we just never talk about them. And, like I say, once you speak about it, you break the hold it has on you.
Talk a little bit about how one goes about putting a book like this together. First of all, finding the voices that you want, and then bringing them together in this book.
So, it was just reaching out to different women in different places. I wanted to cast the net wide as well, because it's one thing with a book like this. I mean, I know in a lot of anthologies, people will get, authors to contribute. But it's not every author that has a story about abuse, right?
Yes.
So, I couldn't limit myself just to, writers that I know or the literary circle. So I had to expand my reach. And it was, even going onto Tracy Goings' page and putting out a call to women who were willing to share their stories there. And I got responses also from that group. So it was just casting the net far and wide. And other women who then contributed also knew a woman who had a story. And it became like a word of mouth thing. And, some women that I started with, some didn't submit. Okay. So some found that in the process of writing, they really reliving the trauma was, became too, something they couldn't, get through.
How much did you feel that you had to sort of hold space for the contributors to the book in the sense of honoring their stories and honoring their experiences? Because as you say, this when you are reliving an experience and then putting it out there, I mean, that's the title, isn't it? When secrets become stories and the secret, and you speak in your introduction again about how shame is able to hide in secrets. So just how much did you feel as a sort of it was important to hold space and almost as a gatekeeper perhaps, or a protector of what was being shared with you, given to you, gifted to you?
No, I just felt like whatever, for me, I'm just like a conduit, whatever's coming to me, I'm just like the conduit. Sometimes, like, how they say as a parent, you don't own your child, you just a vehicle for your child to come through. The child comes through you. And so the stories just literally came through me to the rest of the world. And that's how I viewed my role in this whole process. And there were instances where some women who had a story couldn't write it, right? They didn't, they weren't able to articulate it, right? They would send a voice note or something. And then I wrote some of those stories. It wasn't about them being able to write. It was all, it was just having that story. And like I was saying to you, it was also important to show women from diverse backgrounds and race, to show that gender-based violence is not discriminatory. It's like we're all vulnerable. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, rich or poor, you're in the rural area or in the urban, we all are potential victims. We're all vulnerable. And I'm so glad, these brave women came on board to help us convey that message.
So was there anyone who wanted to contribute but wanted to remain anonymous?
Yeah, some women did remain anonymous.
Right.
They did. And because, they're still that secondary victimization.
Exactly.
And some women in my book, the ones that did contribute, were disowned, as a result of the abuse they suffered. So
really,
some of them have had those ramifications already. So they've been disowned, they've been cut off, they've suffered, so the consequences of speaking out. So it's not easy. So that's why I'm saying it really takes courage to speak out. The book is one way, but I just, want to say to other women, it's not the only way. It's not for everyone to put their story out there. That's one thing. That also takes courage. Sometimes it just, you need to speak to one person you trust, and that's all you need.
Who would you ideally like to see this book fall into the hands of? Is it survivors of GBV that they might not feel?
So for me, I think it's victims of GBV. Yeah. My first sort of priority. Because I know how it feels like to think that, you're alone and nobody else has gone through this. But it's like saying you're not alone, actually. Most importantly, I'd also like men to read it. They are the perpetrators of the violence.
Yeah.
And I think, for them to also make, introspect and reflect. The few men that have read it, and communicated to me, have felt ashamed. And they have encouraged other men. They said it was a difficult read. And it should be, because this is what women go through. And I don't think men understand at times what they put women through. So I'd like more men to read it, and introspect. That's all.
Yeah. It's often when I read books like this, and whether it be around GBV or whether it be around race or whether it be, I often wonder that there's the hope and that comes with people are speaking out and sharing their lived experiences. And then there is the sort of, the thought where you think, but will it end up in the hands of the people who really need to read it? You're raising a son, Sue, and so I wonder from that sense, is it a book that you would? Oh, he's 7. At what point would you be happy for him to pick up the book and read it? And do you talk to him about gender-based violence and your own experiences of that? Because raising a young black man in the world that we live in, it's not for sissies, as they say.
I do. I mean, with me, with him, it started with the very thing that I said, you know, no one should touch you.
Yeah.
Even as a boy, I mean, boys do get molested as well.
Yeah.
And I instilled that, you know, these are your private parts. Nobody touches them without your permission. This is, you know, I've already instilled all that. I mean, and I, the earlier we start, the better, because I think of myself when I was molested as a child. Mm. Nobody's had that conversation with me. So, you know, I didn't know what was happening. And I was silenced. But I'm thinking if I had, you know, been told that it was wrong, you know, I would have had the confidence to maybe to say, okay, what you're doing to me is wrong, and I'm going to tell an adult. You know what I'm saying? It's just being equipped with the words and, you know, and the language for it. So for me, I was very, you know, deliberate with that. And even now he knows, like, he doesn't hit girls. Because I remember he told me this one little girl kicked him. And he said, but I didn't hit her, you know, kick her back, mommy, because we don't hurt girls. So it's those lessons, you know, you try and instill.
Yeah.
So that he grows up with them. Because once it's instilled, you know, every year, you know, he grows up knowing that we don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, respect, you know, and on principles. So it's, you instill those from a young age. And I probably, when he's a teenager, I think I'd let him read it, you know. Now he's a bit young, but I think we need to start them young to understand, you know, kindness, respect towards women, you know, respecting other people in general, and just instill those, you know, principles from a young age.
Yeah.
But every time there's an opportunity to teach, you take it and teach that lesson.
For sure. We started the conversation, Sue, and I said that it was I would probably make myself very unpopular if I didn't talk a bit about you and talk about your writing process. I would equally make myself unpopular if I didn't ask you, which is a question that authors hate being asked, but if you are working on something, you alluded to working on a new novel that you're currently researching for. Mm-hmm. Are you able to tell us anything about that, or are you in your head thinking, shut up, SJ, end the interview?
Not at all. I mean, look, it's going to be different in terms of, it's in the historical fiction genre.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll be riveting as usual.
Yeah. Of course.
Look, I've started writing a bit of it. But yeah, I mean, the thing is with this book, it's something I wrote many, many years ago.
Mm.
So it's not a totally new book. I'm just rewriting a book that I wrote many years ago. Like you said before, yes, I've got, you know, 4 published books, but I have a lot of unpublished material as well.
Yeah.
And so I think what I want to do now is to rework a lot of that material. And this book particularly is reworking a book that I wrote many years ago.
It's exciting. I think on that note, we can close off leaving your fans, leaving your readers in the knowledge that there is another Sue Nyati book to come. Do not fear.
Yeah.
Sue, listen, it's been an absolute treat. I've loved this conversation. I've been so looking forward to sitting down with you and doing this. And I really have. I've enjoyed every moment. It's been a real treat. And I hope that everyone listening to the PageCast has too. The latest book is called When Secrets Become Stories, Women Speak Out, of which Sue Nyati is the editor. But of course, you can get hold of her other works, The Polygamist, Gold Diggers, and A Family Affair. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Sarah. Enjoyed chatting to you.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of PageCast. We have an incredible lineup of author interviews, so head over to our Facebook and Instagram and follow Jonathan Ball Publishers to stay updated and in the know regarding future episodes. Thanks for your interest in the story behind the story. Happy reading from everyone at PageCast.